Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how the omega-3 fatty acids helps you fight depression. Very important in-depth discussion on this. Then we're going to look at the role of magnesium in helping our brain. Now, we know that magnesium helps our heart and our musculature, but there's new research on a new type of magnesium that really makes a difference in your brain power. Also, how decreased vitamin C levels were found with people who had malignancies, and why we need more vitamin C, and supplements may prevent hereditary deafness. We're going to talk about that. And higher vitamin D levels linked to improved prostate cancer survival. And they took a look at ginseng from a whole lot of studies and found it really is good for diabetes. And a diet that was designed to lower blood pressure also reduces the risk of kidney disease. That's from Johns Hopkins University. And Garcinia cambogia, it helps prevent kidney stones. I'll explain how that works. And the University of Melbourne is saying if you're a diabetic and you're trying the paleo diet, think twice. It's not supported by any good science, and we've said that many times here. So we have a lot to talk about, always the latest, always. What confuses some people, and it is routine for others, is we only use the finest peer-reviewed scientific literature, always citing it, so that you can have confidence that what is shared is grounded in responsible and reasonable good science. Also today for our environmental segment, we're going to have multiple reports, such as the scientists discover what's killing bees, finally, and it's worse than you thought. Then we're going to look at the latest leak that shows the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the TTIP puts U.S. clean energy goals in mortal danger. So all of the efforts to clean up our air will be wiped away, and to clean up our water will be wiped away. Also, climate disruption's new record. Carbon dioxide levels reached the highest point in 15 million years. That's correct. So that is important that we understand what's happening. A lot of people don't want to look at it. Okay. But you better know that the worsening climate emergency and the record CO2 levels, those emissions demand a vegetarian diet. They demand that we become very conscious of where we're living because there are places that are not going to be sustainable. In fact, we'll give you the latest from Climate News Network that the Mediterranean area, the entire Mediterranean, the entire Middle East, every single one of those countries is no longer sustainable. Not now, not ever again. Strong statement, I'm not the one making it. You can read this in the Journal of Geophysical Research, Atmosphere, and they will explain how they came to this driest ever in 900 years. But with the cycle that we're in, it's not going to reverse itself. It's just going to keep going. So we're going to talk about that. Also today, I'm going to go through some headlines that are not in the mainstream media, and you'll have a chance to respond in our talkback segment. For example, things that are important, at least from my perspective, they're important, but you wouldn't know it from most other places because they don't give it relevance. The federal government makes billions of dollars off student debt, and it says, well, if you drop out of school and you owe us money and you're delinquent, we're going after you. The feds don't care if you dropped out of college or the reasons why. They want their money back with interest, or you'll be arrested and go to a debtor's prison. Also, I want to explain that we can do something very important individually. We can stop for a moment before we purchase something and do a little homework on the internet and say, where was this made? Do they use slave labor to make my product that I'm about to purchase, this blouse, this refrigerator, this cell phone? And if so, do I have a moral responsibility to think about the consequences to other people? And if I don't, what does it say about me and our culture? So I'm going to share that with you. Also, I'm going to be doing a really powerful program this evening at 7 p.m. on NATO, because no one's talking about NATO, but they should. Why should they? Because NATO, in my opinion, is a completely criminal organization, and it is the most dangerous organization in the world. It's the one that invaded and destroyed Yugoslavia, destroyed Libya. It's involved in all these conflicts. Well, I have someone who's going to be coming on board who can tell us the inside on this, Colonel Lawrence Worklesen. And he is a former chief of staff of General Colin Powell, and he's a distinguished professor of government at College of William & Mary. Also coming on will be an individual, John Walsh. Now, John Walsh is unique on this. He's a real scholar on all things leading to NATO, and he's a leading anti-war investigative writer. So you won't want to miss that. In any case, I'm going to give you a little bit on that today, because remember when America and the Clintons bombed Yugoslavia and all the leading editorials showing us why we were doing it? It was all for humanitarian reasons, because genocide was being perpetrated, and the bad person over there, the one who was shown to be like Hitler, was Milosevic. Well, turns out, what do you think about this? The major war crimes tribunal, the Triton, remember, he died. Well, wow, what did they find out? The former president of Yugoslavia, who was brought up on crimes, war crimes, committed in the Bosnia War. Well, I'll tell you what they found out a little later on. Let's begin. We know a lot of people are depressed for a lot of legitimate reasons. Our goal is to try to help them get through this. And just one of the ways they can get through this is by understanding the power of the omega-3 fatty acids. Now, when you have a handful of walnuts, or you have some flaxseed oil, you're getting omega-3 fatty acids. If you eat cold water fish, you're getting the fatty acids. All of the scientific studies now show that depressive symptoms due to chronic inflammation, and they almost all go hand in hand, are relieved substantially with the omega-3. They're strongly anti-inflammatory, and they also alleviate depression. And that is just a 1-2 combination, because when you alleviate inflammation, you're also helping dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, ALS. All of those are helped along with depression. And a Japanese study published recently showed that when you have high levels of omega-3 fatty acids, the EPA and the DHA, it can really drop your depression scores. This was a large group of 2,123 subjects, but equally divided between men and women. They were 40 and older, and they started taking the fatty acids. And the highest improvement were in those who got their blood sugar up. How good was it at lowering depression? 43%. 43% of the people improved dramatically in their depression scores. There's no drug in America that does that. So, inexpensive, easy to take, non-toxic, the omega-3 fatty acids. I would suggest about 1,500 milligrams in the morning and 1,500 milligrams in the afternoon for turning off inflammation and helping you with depression. Talking about the brain, normal magnesium just doesn't get in there. But now they've come up with some new scientific research on magnesium, and they found that magnesium plays an essential role in supporting the brain's pliability, what they call plasticity. which is more youthful, flexible brain. It is better at learning and memory and cognitive awareness. And that's all very positive. But it requires a nutrient to do that. And what will restore an older brain, meaning over the age of 40, to a younger brain, and in the same time improve your cognition and actually reverse brain aging? Now, you ready for this? By as much as 14 years. Let me repeat that. You can de-age your brain by as much as 14 years. How about that? So if you're 60, your brain would be 48 to 40, well, 46. Big difference. This was done at MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And what was the main way of doing it? By a unique compound called magnesium L-threonate. And they found it boosted brain magnesium levels by approximately 15%. When comparing various forms of magnesium, they found that the threonate had the highest bioavailability and brain magnesium loading ability. As a result, they found that the magnesium L-threonate improved the brain in memory, learning, and cognition. So we all could benefit from that. And so that's important. The type of nutrient we take into our system can make the difference. Also, I was asked a question recently at an airport where someone came over, had seen me on television, West Palm Beach on PBS, and was asking me a question. Gary, I have chronic migraines. I've been taking some medication, but that medication has some serious side effects, and the side effects of the medication I'm taking, he said, was muscle weakness, and he had been an athlete, and he had been a runner, then he played tennis, and now he can't do either because his muscles are so chronically fatigued, and he has pains in his muscle. He also found that his blood sugar was dramatically lowered, and he would frequently stand up and then almost pass out. And he also said that he had depression. And he said, I'm fully aware that these are the side effects of the medication I'm taking for my migraines. Is there anything you can think of that could help me? And I said, are you familiar with butterbur? He said, no. What is it? And I explained to him, and for anyone else in this audience, just the little things that sometimes can make a difference. Butterbur, B-U-T-T-E-R, butter, bur, B-U-R. It's an herb. It's a perennial herb. And there's an extract that is derived from the butterbur herb. And it has a remarkable ability to just turn off headaches. And migraine sufferers in particular benefit by almost 50%. Why? Simple. Butterbur's principal, most powerful, isolated ingredient is a nutrient called petacin. Peta, P-E-T-A, sin, S-I-N. And it reduces the smooth muscle spasms and is extremely good at relaxing the constriction of cerebral blood vessels. So the petacin in butterbur allows it to help manage the upper respiratory inflammation and asthma attacks and urinary disorders and menstrual cramps and kidney stones. All these involve smooth muscle spasm. And a lot of people have cramps in their legs. And that also helps, especially cramps in the calves. So it's really good at migraines, but it does these other things as well. So the takeaway message is simple. If you're having headaches, and especially migraine, but if you also have, and you have any form of upper respiratory inflammation, if you have PMS, you should consider looking at butterbur, one word, B-U-T-T-E-R-B-U-R. And the active ingredient in that petacin can make all the difference in the world. And it's natural, and there's no side effects. And studies have actually proven its benefit. Now, real quick, We now have a report from Scientific Reports that the role of combination of free radical scavengers, that's vitamin C and vitamin E, in prevention of a common form of hereditary deafness caused by mutations in the connection 26 gene. And they found that the antioxidants make the difference. Vitamin C, beta-carotene, vitamin E, also magnesium, slowed hearing loss progression and improved hearing thresholds. That's what they said in the study. So, and that was in the current issue of Scientific Reports. Also, for the you who are being treated for any forms of malignancy, an article in Results in Immunology documents the finding of decreased serum levels of vitamin C in patients with the malignancies, like leukemia, multiple myeloma, and non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Quote from the study, as ascorbic acid has a major influence on regeneration of immune cells in vitro, we executed an observational study in which ascorbic acid serum values of patients with these malignancies treated with and without stem cell transplantation were compared with those of healthy volunteers to see if low ascorbic acid levels should be considered of importance regarding immune recovery of these patients. And they found that it did. So, takeaway message, take vitamin C. If you should have cancer, take a lot of vitamin C, especially intravenous vitamin C. It can make all the difference in the world in helping you. And if you're a diabetic, they studied a lot of different reports and good quality studies on the effect of ginseng, and they found that, yes, indeed, from China's Xinjiang University, ginseng in men and women with impaired glucose tolerance, type 2 diabetes, were benefited tremendously. This was from 8 separate trials. So ginseng, I suggest between 100 to 300 milligrams a day, and that can make a big difference. And also for men with prostate cancer, according to an article on cancer epidemiology, biomarkers, and prevention done at the National Cancer Institute, vitamin D at higher levels is associated with an increased chance of surviving prostate cancer. They looked at 1,000 men in the alpha tocopherol beta carotene cancer prevention study, and they found that having that vitamin D made all the difference in the world. So make sure you're getting your vitamin D. That could help save your life. And we also know that we need to have more omega-3 fatty acids because it lowers inflammation. PLOS One, the scientific journal, did an analysis of multiple studies and found 18 randomized controlled studies involving the omega-3 fatty acids. And when you have the omega-3 fatty acids, you turn off inflammation in the body. Now, what could that mean? Well, you could help yourself with osteoarthritis, osteoporosis, diabetes, cancer, heart disease, dementia, Alzheimer's, macular degeneration, cataracts, glaucoma. All of those are due to inflammation. So take that and be benefited. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a brief break and come back. Please stay with us. Everyone, I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take on some issues now, and then we're going to go to our environmental report. And while we're taking on these issues, I'd like for you to be able to think about these and call in on our talkback line and share your points of view. Here are some topics. I'm going to run through them rather quickly. First up, we now know, and I began to talk briefly about this at the end of yesterday's program, but we ran out of time. There are more than 3,000 special economic zones around the world. They're called special economic zones, or SEZ. And they employ over 65 million people, always at the lowest wages. And they manage to cut deals in the countries. And almost always these deals involve, well, we're not going to charge you any tariff taxes. We're going to give you land free, water free, even sometimes electricity free. We're going to make exemptions to our national labor laws. We're also not going to allow any workers' rights movements. Don't have to worry about unionizing. Don't have to worry about strikes. It won't happen. And we're going to give you an endless supply of cheap, biddable labor. And these have been called similar to labor camps. And they're all over the place. Now, why should you be concerned? Because starting with Ronald Reagan, there was an effort to move American jobs overseas. The corporate interests were being taken care of. After all, what is the value of a product? The product has no value in and of itself. The only value in a product is the branding, therefore the trademark. So if you produce a product, let's say you produce a sewing machine, and it's made in America, has been made here for 100 years, but it cost about $80, all told with materials and labor, to make it. But if China says, we'll build you a factory, we'll supply quality labor, and therefore you can make that same sewing and export it back in the United States for $25. So therefore you can retail it at $75. You could actually sell this in box stores for less than you had previously made it for in America. Well, that means that they are going to make a much higher margin of profit, and they don't care about the people in America that would lose their jobs, the communities that would be affected. All they care about is profit. So that went on, and over 30 million Americans over 35 years lost their jobs. Many were able to find other jobs in other industries, some back in the same industries. But then once one corporation started realizing, we can't compete, we also make sewing machines, or we make bicycles, or we make cell phones, how can we be in America and make a product when you've got unions, and you've got labor standards, and you've got OSHA, you've got regulations, you got how many hours a person could work, and what temperature they have to work in? Well, that's crazy. Let's just throw all that out the window. Let's go right over to Bangladesh. They work women 18 hours a day, 6 days a week. They have the shortest lifespan in the world. They're paid 14 cents an hour. They make quality dresses. Men walk up and down the aisles with switches, and if a woman should not be working at the time that they think, sewing on a button, they can just smack them on the head and back with a switch, and then the woman can't do anything because there are no rights for women in Indonesia or in Bangladesh or in India or in, well, the Middle East, with rare exception. That was Libya under Gaddafi, but that's gone. Thank you, Hillary Clinton, to make sure that women's rights are taken care of, a new kind of feminism that we'll see in the Democratic Party. We really care about women. Do you? How do you care about them? Do you care about all the African-American and Latino women whose husbands are in prison, sons are in prison, daughters are in prison, because you made marijuana possession 7 years in jail? I see. That's how you care about them. Stop and searching. By the way, are you stopping and searching people in Washington, D.C., in the neighborhood down where you live, near your brownstone? No. In Georgetown? No. Why not? How about out there in Quogue, you know, where you got the $3, $5, $10, $20 million homes? Are you stopping the kids coming out of there that have a hoodie? White kid? Not stopping white kids with hoodies, but 583,000 blacks and Latinos you did? I see. That's a new type of feminism. Gee whiz. Well, that's what you see all over the world, because who are they exploiting? Women. Everywhere. And who was the number one exploiter of women in the United States government in its entire history? In the entire history. Hillary Clinton is. One example. In Haiti, when you had all those people displaced and hungry and thirsty, only one penny, 1 cent out of a dollar, went to the Haitian government. And little of that went to the Haitian people, because it's utterly corrupt. Instead, it went to these completely phony, worthless, useless, dangerous, and criminal nonprofits. They build their own villas. They have pure water. They have security. They have clean food. Not the Haitian people. But worse still is what Bill and Hillary did. They were both behind opening up this very specific, large compound up in Caracal at the other end of the island, the north end of the island, where there was no earthquake damage at all, none. None of the people there were affected by earthquake. And they opened up this big factory. It was supposed to employ like 50,000 people. It employed under 5,000. At a good wage, they had less than minimum wage, and even less than minimum wage in Haiti. They had to work long hours. There was no unions allowed. But who were the people? Well, they were manufacturers, like South Korean manufacturers of clothing. And these were all friends of Clinton's and donators to the Clinton Foundation. Or countries where suddenly you opened up a factory in one of these trading zones where you could exploit the labor, not have to pay taxes, not have to worry about unions, not have to worry about health care. And lo and behold, you suddenly want Bill Hillary to come to your country to give a talk for $500,000 for a half hour or an hour. Wonderful way to make money. All completely transparent. No, not so much. So just remember, I think that we should absolutely confront this entire hypocrisy that this person or the so-called faux feminists around her care about women and women's rights. Maybe she cares about the women's rights in Saudi Arabia, where three women were stoned to death because they had been raped. No. How about those beaten and lashed? No. How about the right to assembly, the right of speech, the right of religion? No, you don't have those rights. So you have no rights as a woman at all. You're just a breeding machine in most of the Arab countries. But somehow the countries are good enough that you bow down, you give anything that they ask for from the leaders. So again, explain to me, maybe I'm just a little more dense today than normal. How is that honoring women? That's our talkback question. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear your thoughts. I also like to hear your thoughts about all of these 3,000 special zones where multinational corporations can exploit labor, create cheap products, bring them back in the United States. And boy, Americans just love cheap products at box stores. They even love it so much they line up on a Black Friday to rush in. And if you happen to be in their way, as some people have, and you get trampled to death, that's all right, because someone's going to get to that big flat screen TV before someone else. And the fact that someone died in the process last year, two people, is irrelevant. But it isn't irrelevant. It should be highly relevant. That's one issue. Also, we have the federal government now saying, we don't care why you dropped out of college. You pay us back our money or you're in trouble. Quote from Bloomberg, when it comes to collecting on student loans, the U.S. Department of Education treats college dropouts the same way Ivy League graduates. They just want the money back. New data show the perils of that approach. Dropouts who took out loans to finance the degrees they ultimately obtain often end up worse off for attending college. Unlike their peers who earn degrees, dropouts generally don't command higher wages after leaving college, making it harder for them to repay their student debt. The typical college dropout experienced a steep fall in wealth from 2010 to 13, figures from the Federal Reserve in Washington show. 11% drop in income, the sharpest decline among any group in America. It should therefore come as no surprise that half the federal student loan borrowers who dropped out of school within the past 3 years are late on their payments, according to the Education Department figures provided to Bloomberg. More than half of those delinquent borrowers are at least 91 days behind. Okay, and so it goes. Well, now we have these vulture capitalist firms that if you're late on any bill, they go after you. Now we have private debtors' prisons where you are charged for your arrest. You're brought into a private jail system. The guards are private police. The judge is a private judge. The bail bondsman, that's going to charge you a fee, the probation officer, and every day you're in their private jail, they charge you anywhere from $125 to $150 a day. But you say you're too poor to pay the bill to begin with. How are you possibly going to be paying an accumulating bill with interest for being in there if you don't have any relatives or people to bail you out? They don't care. So at the end of being in jail for 2 weeks because you couldn't pay a $40 parking ticket, you now have a $2,000 private prison debt accumulating and compounding interest. That is correct. So you could theoretically spend the rest of your life in a debtor's prison. That is correct. And Obama's behind this. Obama, Clinton, they're all behind it. Because the people that fund their campaigns and provide them with the technocrats to run their campaigns in different offices are the ones who control these. Your thoughts on debtors' prisons, your thoughts on being able to be harassed, arrested, fined, penalized because you're too poor to pay the loans that you borrowed. That's our second issue you can address on TalkBack, 888-874-4888. Now, I have a couple suggestions. This morning I had a discussion with three physicians and that I'm filming. And I gave them this thought. I'll share it with you. I believe that we could make a radical change in the United States. We could pay for every doctor all their costs to go to medical school. They don't pay a penny. If they want specializations, fine. We pay for that. We also change internship and residency. No longer do they work, 16, 24, 36 hours, are tired, burned out, fatigued, giving them no money. Instead, they get a living wage from the time they get their medical degree. They work 8 hours a day in residency, 8 hours a day through internship, and we give them an average of what the average person in that field, whatever the field is, internal medicine, neurology, for the past 5 years. So you take a five-year average, and that's what they make from day one. So they make a really good living wage. But they can't charge anyone, so they can't make $1 million a year. They might make between $150,000 to $225,000 a year, which they absolutely deserve. But here's the deal. There's no longer any suing doctors. Therefore, there's no malpractice. Therefore, there's no defensive medicine. Right now, we're spending between $200 to $300 billion a year because doctors are terrified of being sued because we're a highly litigious society. And so therefore, they're giving you tests you don't need, over-medicating you in ways that you didn't need that medication. So if we eliminated this, then they would give you the more proper care. But also, we would change completely and get the AMA out of medicine completely. We would close down all state medical boards, which are non-constructive and political in nature. And instead, we would have a curriculum in medical school that the doctor must also take courses in natural immunology, therefore understanding how to get someone healthy, in environmental medicine, therefore understanding everything from the chemicals and clothing to the particle boards and the outgassing to pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, everything that causes us to be healthy or sick called environmental medicine, they now know. Right now, there is no course in this. They have to have real in-depth courses in good nutrition and also in the difference between organic and non-organic growing. They also have to understand the importance of homeopathic medicine and Ayurvedic medicine and Chinese medicine. They must have courses learning the different healing systems around the world. So they're really learning healing in medical school, not just pharmacology. They also must make a law that no pharmaceutical people can approach them and no more of these continuing education credit courses, which are complete frauds, where I, mind you, I've taught at these, all right? Just this year, I was invited to California. They flew me out, and I gave a 2-hour lecture on complementary medicine, building the immune system through a plant-based diet. And these were all orthodox doctors, and it was also video streamed to, I believe I was told, 1,600 physicians. And then I flew back that same night, long trip out and back. But it was worth it because I was able to give something, and the doctors, one after us, says, we never learned this in medical school. So we would redesign medical school to be a school where people would learn how the body develops disease and imbalances and the best non-toxic way of recovering them. Now, if that should also include some of the pharmaceutical approaches that prove safe and effective by independent studies, not the studies done by the manufacturers, fine. So use the best of what works, but you don't exclude something based upon bias. That's what I see a doctor should be. Therefore, we protect the doctor. They can have longer time with their patients. You give them a guaranteed income. We pay for their education, and therefore, they take the profit out of medicine. Right now, this year, as I'm speaking, we will spend $1.5 trillion, $1.5 trillion on medicine. $1 trillion of that will go to the insurance companies. So if you have universal health care, you don't need the bureaucracy. You don't need the paperwork. You don't need all the coding systems. And that would relieve, at least we would save at least $2.5 trillion a year. Imagine that. At the end of 10 years, you got over $22-23 trillion saved just there. Plus, you've gotten people healthier. Plus, you have a national health plan to prevent disease. So that was a suggestion I gave these doctors, and I'm also sharing it with this audience. Now, you may say it's impossible because no one's going to give up all that control and money and power, and you are right. But I also believe we have to start somewhere, and even if we start with an idea, and even if that idea may take decades before it comes to fruition, it's worth that than just simply continuing a system that is utterly corrupt, utterly broken, and fails and kills people. It's the number one cause of death and injury in America for the last 20 years. Kind of think it's time to stop. Next up, also want to talk about, this is important. This is our final talk back from Lawrence Davidson from Consortium News, which is a good place, by the way. They do good work there. It's an article entitled Letting Saudi Arabia Off the Hook for 9/11. I'll only read the first two pages. On November 27, 2002, a bipartisan commission was established by Congress to investigate the September 11, 2001 attacks on the World Trade Center and Pentagon. By the time the commission was created, President George W. Bush had characterized the attacks as acts of war, adding that freedom and democracy are under attack. It was therefore to be expected that anyone who was actually or even imagined to be involved in these attacks was going to be labeled as an enemy. However, when on July 22, 2004, after 2 years of investigation, the 9/11 Commission report was released, something was missing. 29 pages, commonly known as the 28 pages, had been withheld from publication. These pages specifically discussed the connections between 9/11 hijackers and individuals working in the United States for the government of Saudi Arabia. The withholding from publication of these specific pages was apparently ordered by the same George W. Bush, who was ostensibly willing to confront anyone who would, in his worldview, threaten the U.S. Bring them on, he said. For the next 12 years, that is, between July 2004 and July 2016, the 29 pages remained classified and therefore unavailable to the public or press. They were available to members of Congress if they would travel to a secure location, one person at a time, read the document. They could take notes, but not reveal to anyone what they learned. So what was going on here? According to former Senator Bob Graham, and Bob Graham is a longtime advocate of declassifying the pages, what all these years of suppression came to was, quote, a carefully orchestrated campaign to protect our Saudi Arabian friends from public revelations, quote, ample evidence of Saudi Arabia's intimate ties to Al-Qaeda and the 9/11 attacks. Okay, so if Graham's correct, Saudi Arabia received a free pass despite being involved directly in acts of war against the United States. How is this possible? Well, consider the following. There exists a long-standing commercial relationship and personal friendship between the Bush clan and the Saudi royal family. Even more important, Saudi Arabia has long managed the oil market to keep prices in the West at affordable levels. Presently, the Saudis have hundreds of billions of dollars invested in various ways in the United States. These include stocks, bonds, real estate, and currency holdings. And finally, Saudi Arabia is the top purchaser of U.S. weapons, periodically buying as much as $60 billion at a time worth of armaments from the U.S. defense contractors. This puts Saudi Arabia in a very strong economic position in relation to the United States. Consider the hypothetical consequences of a rapid withdrawal of Saudi funds from the United States. At the very least, this would send the stock market into a tailspin. The U.S. would be forced to freeze Saudi assets, and not only the American and Saudi economies would suffer, but the world economy as well. The Saudis have been known to assert what can only be called economic blackmail against the United States government to hide embarrassing facts about themselves, including their dealings with terrorist groups, ranging from offshoots of Al-Qaeda to ISIS. They can and do argue that if Saudi agents do at times act against U.S. interests, even to the point of aiding terrorists, they do so as rogue agents and not under the authority of the central government. The problem is that, just like America's rogue agents, they never seem to suffer punishment. Then they have lobbying power, and there are so-called allies in our war against the ISIS that they actually fund. So here's the idea. What should we do about Saudi Arabia? Now we have proof, irrefutable proof, that they were complicit in 9/11. So if Americans were outraged by the terrorists and want to see them stopped and held accountable, do we have an obligation to give the Saudi Arabia and its government and its princes and its rulers a free pass? You cannot mention this in the American media, and there is no talk about this in the American media. It's as if they're not funding terrorists, they're not staging terrorism, which they are, they're not complicit in coups, which they are, and they weren't complicit in 9/11, which they were. So if we're willing to give them a pass, why not give everyone else that gives us money and has lobbyists a pass on what they do? What are your thoughts? 888-874-4888. And finally, one other thing, this is not important as far as talkback, but I've been saying all along, do not trust any figures that the government gives you because they lie. For example, they say we have a 4.6 to 4.7% unemployment rate. That is an out-and-out lie. We have closer to a 28% unemployment rate. Our unemployment rate is right up there with Greece. So we have over 106 million Americans who are able to work who are not working. So we simply exclude them. We don't count them. Well, what kind of nonsense is that? That's the kind of nonsense that technocrats, bureaucrats, and oligarchs like to play as if the entire American public are not going to understand the reality. But we do understand the reality. Because if you had to admit what kind of failure your economic system is, your trickle-down economics, and then we would simply choose another system. But you try to hide this in public by saying we only have a small unemployment rate. No, you don't. No, you don't. Minimally 23%, more realistically 27% unemployment. Just something to think about. We're going to now go to an audio clip. And our audio clip right now is, I wanted you to hear a little segment on water for gold.
New Zealand's always been dominated by foreign companies, whether it was colonization or neoliberalism. Now what the government's done is negotiate in secret for us to sign up to the TPPA. I've been working around these deals for several decades now. One of the biggest problems about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement is that it gives foreign investors the right to sue sovereign governments when governments do what they should, and they regulate or introduce new policies. Investor-state disputes are basically an assault on our sovereignty. They challenge our right to have our government act in our interests in the future. One of the worst examples of how this right of foreign investors to sue governments operates is what's happened with OceanaGold in El Salvador. You've got a country where 97% of the water supply is contaminated. You use cyanide to extract gold. That affects the water supply. When you have toxic water supplies, as the people of El Salvador have to face, you have health issues, you have displacement issues, you have a whole lot of social issues. People of El Salvador have been fighting against colonization for centuries. Now they're faced with the corporate colonization of mining companies. The people of El Salvador said no, no more. And the government finally imposed a moratorium on more mining licenses. OceanaGold has turned around and sued the government of El Salvador under an agreement with the US. It wants $300 million from a really poor country. When El Salvador defends itself in one of these investment tribunals, it's not like an ordinary court. The judges are actually practicing investment lawyers as well. They're ad hoc tribunals, so they're just set up for the case. There's no consistency or predictability in what will happen. So it's a real problem. It's a dodgy system. OceanaGold and El Salvador is just one example of a whole series of outrageous cases that use these investor-state processes. There's a massive backlash internationally against them. This backlash is a groundswell that is only going to grow. Around the world, governments are withdrawing from these agreements. They're saying no more. So we need to join with them and make sure that this deal never happens. OceanaGold already has operations in New Zealand. So for New Zealand to bind ourselves more deeply into this regime is an abdication of the responsibility of the government for the future.
One voice, a professor in New Zealand talking about, and Australia talking about, the danger of these treaties. We just want to keep reminding you, tell your legislator no on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Now let's go to our talkback line and say hello to Betty from Brooklyn. Hi, Betty, your turn.
Hi, Gary. I have a comment for you. You keep on talking about Hillary Clinton and the bad-mouthing her and how awful she is. And no doubt much of this is true. You also say that most likely she will be our next president. In that case, what good does it do? By the way, Jill Stein is not coming in this year, and the only other choice we have is Donald Trump. So I think Donald Trump is the worst of the worst. So I don't know who else we got, unless you want to run.
Okay, well, no, thank you. I want to live a little longer. Let's dissect what you just said, and I thank you, Betty, for bringing this to our attention. Yes, I am challenging Hillary Clinton. I am standing up and challenging not just her, but it's always her and her husband. Why? Because from the very beginning, before they were running for president, I was doing investigative reports on all the unusual murders down in Arkansas. I even hired an ex-Army special intelligence agent to go down there when I couldn't and document the planes coming in and unloading drugs and then going back out again. And I saw what they were like. The people down there knew what they were like, and they were ruthless. And there was a long litany of crimes they committed. So when people are able to have power people behind them, for example, how did he become a Rhodes Scholar? He's not the brightest guy in the world, certainly not through his grades. It was because he was chosen by a man named Fulbright, Senator Fulbright from Arkansas. He also had a mentor in the governor, Governor Winthrop Rockefeller, one of the Rockefeller brothers. As he was the governor of Arkansas, his other governor, Nelson, was governor of New York. And therefore, he was groomed. Therefore, he was one of those group of people who were selected, groomed, then elected. So it's not as if an average person had a chance to run for office and show us what they were capable of doing. Hillary Clinton was behind many of those decisions. It has been shown now that she was behind promoting GATT and NAFTA. And look at what NAFTA gave us. Think of how that eviscerated 1.2 million jobs of union workers. Also, she was for sending jobs out to China, and clothes were being made in China when she was on the board of Walmart for 6 years, and she was a union buster for And so how can she go out and talk to union people as if she's your friend? She's not your friend. She was for Walmart. In fact, Walmart didn't elect her to the board. They created a special place on the board. They had never done that in their history before or since. In fact, the place that she had has never been filled. That's the kind of relationship she had with the Walton family, one of the wealthiest families in America, Sam Walton's kids. She was pro-Monsanto, and she was pro the TPP. She made 44 separate statements in governments around the country, around the world, to support the TPP. She was for the Keystone Pipeline. She was for the invasion of Libya. How can I not, in good consciousness, challenge someone who has caused at least 22,000 innocent women and men to die, a country that was the number one country in women's rights, the number one country in income, the number one country in literacy, 88% literacy rate, the highest in Africa or the Middle East, the number one country in that entire area of the world in democratic processes, with thousands of people having being on committees every day to make decisions, and then lying about Gaddafi, as the people did, then behind the invasion of Syria. We're not talking about a normal person. We're talking about a person that is the ultimate, most dangerous woman on the planet. So will I stand up? Yes, I will. Will I stand up for those people who believe in spiritual feminism, as I have? Yes, I will. Will I get in her face? You bet I will. But I'll do it methodically, and I'll do it with facts. What people want to believe about her personally is their choice. I've never discussed her sex life. I've never discussed her husband's sex life, because that's none of my business nor your business. But I will discuss her policies in office, because she is the most ruthless politician as Secretary of State we've had since Henry Kissinger. And think of him and what we've now learned about him. So I believe that she would be the worst person as president. Would Donald Trump be much better? Well, as I've said many times, Donald Trump is a 14-year-old lost in a world of petulism. It depends upon who Donald Trump surrounds himself with. If he goes to the same think tanks, he'll surround himself with the people who are part of the problem. But you mentioned Jill Stein. I am absolutely confident that Jill Stein, representing the antithesis of everything Hillary Clinton says she represents, on every single issue, she is absolutely progressive. She's progressive on free education. She's progressive on changing her medical industrial complex, our banking complex. She will stop the wars overseas. She will decommission those bases. She will cut all this military budget. She will stop spying on the people. She's against the Trans-Pacific Partnership. These are all real game changers. So you can say, well, at this moment, she can't win. How do you know she can't win? Do the math. The math says the following. The math says that 21% of registered voters are Republican, 28% are Democrat, 44% are independent. It is the independents who will decide who gets elected, not the Republicans, which are split, and the Democrats, which are split. So now you have, for the first time, even more so than Ross Perot, you have an opportunity for a third-party candidate to create a platform, and that platform then represents how local people could run for state offices and the next round at federal if they join an independent party, and therefore take what we learn from the platform. Because if we don't support a third party like Jill Stein, then it's like not supporting Ralph Nader. I voted for Ralph Nader and Jill Stein, and I will again. Why? Because I believe that we must establish what we need to change now and work towards that point in 4 or 8 years from now. And Hillary Clinton does not have to run against Donald Trump, because Donald Trump's running against himself. And either one of the Trumps will lose, because neither one has anything of value to say. I appreciate your call. Thank you. I'll squeeze one more in here. Let's say hello to Josh from Huntington. Hi, Josh. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. It's good to hear from you. I just wanted to agree with you about Hillary Clinton. And I just feel that she is more dangerous. And she actually has blood on her hands, in my opinion, regarding the Libya embassy. And I don't believe it was negligence. I believe she honestly wanted a pretext to go to war in Libya by letting the embassy get overrun, and she wanted a rally cry and public support to go and do more war in another country. And I'm happy to hear you speak up against Hillary Clinton.
Well, I will speak up against Hillary's machine, because it's not just Hillary, it's a machine. It's the New York Times, it's the Washington Post, it's a CNN, it is NPR, it is PBS, it's even some programs on Pacifica that support her. That's their right to, and I do not deny that right. But also, you said she had blood on her hands. It's not the Libya that the blood comes from, because the war had already occurred in Libya. And that was, Benghazi was post that, but what she did was she knowingly, along with the CIA, she took arms from Libya, and that's why Stevens was there, to make sure that the arms that were captured from Gaddafi were channeled through the CIA annex into Syria vis-a-vis Turkey. And if that were known, then it would show we were complicit in invading and arming terrorists. The so-called moderate terrorists, you know, the moderate terrorists of CIA and Obama back that cut the boy's head off, a 12-year-old boy's head in the back of a truck last week. Those are the people that the John McCain's are. But look at the 500,000 children who died directly because of Hillary Clinton. It was Hillary Clinton's call when she sent Madeleine Albright, her close friend, on 60 Minutes with Leslie Stahl. And Hillary and Bill Clinton had caused the infrastructure in Iraq, which is a war crime, against the Geneva Convention, where you intentionally take out septic systems, electrical grids, and power for water systems, water treatment plants, and they did that. And under Freedom of Information, it came out. And then the kids started dying of dysentery and typhus, all kinds of conditions they not otherwise would die from. And so on 60 Minutes, Hillary's mouthpiece, Madeleine Albright, when asked, 500,000 dead children, is it worth it? And she paused and says, yes, we believe it is. She's saying Hillary Clinton believes that 500,000 dead Iraqi children is worth something. How can any human being let her have a pass on that? Oh, she didn't have just blood on her hands. She has genocide on her hands. And now she's back in Netanyahu. And could you imagine what's going to happen? I predict that if she's elected president within 24 months, there will be a war on Iran, which will bring the entire Middle East into a war, and that will crush our economy and will have untold consequences to that. Yes, you are right. There is no person in America that would be more dangerous to put in the presidency than Hillary Clinton. That's my personal opinion. Thank you all for listening. We're out of time. Have a nice day, everyone.